Hungary goes to the polls on the 12th of April for a national election that Politico calls the toughest fight of Prime Minister Viktor Orban's political life and one that threatens to end his 16-year rule. The insurgent challenger to Viktor Orban is Peter Maya, leader of the new Tisza party. Maya was once a member of Orban's Fidesz party, but now he's leading the opposition. For the latest on the election, I'm joined by Dr. Stefano Bottoni, who's associate professor at the University of Florence and was a senior research fellow at the Hungarian Academy of Sciences for a decade. And Stefano joins us from Hungary. We last spoke to Stefano in July of 2024 when Tisza had just come from nowhere to pick up 30% of the votes by Hungarians in the European election. Dr. Bottoni, thank you very much for joining us once again on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, there are 199 seats in the Hungarian parliament, so you need 100 to form a majority. Looking at the current state of the chamber, Viktor Orban's Fidesz party has 135 seats, I believe, and Tisza has zero, which is not a great place to be starting from. Could you explain why that is the current situation and where Tisza has come from as a political phenomenon?
If we depart from the situation we have now in the parliament, it is clear that Tisza should have very few opportunities to win these elections. But since we last spoke and since the last general elections in April 2022, the economic, social, and also psychological situation of the country has dramatically changed. The economy is in a longer phase of stagnation or even stagflation, which is a very bad combination for the economy. Corruption is ramping. So corruption has become so endemic and systematic and painful that now even businessmen close to government are starting to feel the backlash. And last very important point, Magyar is a very different blend of opponent than those who came before him. He has no left-wing or left-liberal background. He used to be a member of Fidesz. He used to be very close to Orbán family. He used to be the husband of the Minister of Justice of the Orbán government between 2019 and 2024. And when he came public, he made clear that he's going to build up a new party, which is more like a popular front gathering people of all kinds, from national conservatives to left liberals to greens to libertarians. And he made clear that his ultimate goal is not just to replace Viktor Orban, but to dismantle the regime he has created. Because we have here in Hungary a very different situation from the situation we have in other Central European or post-Soviet countries. You not only have an authoritarian or semi-authoritarian regime, but you also have a constitutional system. So if you want to really replace the system to build up something new, you have to undo the constitutional architecture of the regime.
Well, that is indeed a very tall order for any political force. And I suppose at the basic level, it raises the question of how free and how fair is this election going to be in Hungary if there is discontent against Viktor Orban and Fidesz? Is that actually going to play out in a representative way in the political system?
Elections won't be fair. We know this. The electoral system is very much based on gerrymandering in the individual constituencies.
Yes, I think last time they won 50% of the vote, but won 2/3 of the seats.
Yes, and according to polls, Fidesz could have a narrow majority, even losing the popular vote. This is something we know from the United States as well. So it is technically possible to win constituencies or more constituencies, even losing the popular vote. And this would be legal. But they also have less legal or extra legal ways. Pollsters and investigative journalists have calculated that up to 400,000 to 500,000 ballots can be gathered in the countryside among very poor people by bribing them. It also happened in 2018 or 2022, but now the scale of these frauds are expected to be much higher. Many people are threatened with their family or with their very badly paid public jobs if they don't vote accordingly. So we have to calculate that several hundred thousand Hungarians out of potentially 8 million are not going to vote under free and fair conditions. So Tisza is very strong now among several segments of the Hungarian population. People with a university degree, more than 70%, are expected to vote for Tisza. People under 40, Tisza is strongly leading in the youngster cohorts, and there is a strong mobilization among the first or second voters, which is unprecedented in Hungary. And also, Tisza is now doing much better among women. Orbán used to be, paradoxically, for a party and a government without women in power, he was leading very strongly until recently among women. And now Magyar maybe made this race more even. So what's the issue here? We have a hidden or a deep Hungary, which is dominantly a rural one, where people don't go public, don't go to the media. People have very little access or choose not to have access to alternative media. So they are basically consuming the state-funded media and the government propaganda coming from other outlets. And these people are maybe the last treasure Viktor Orbán can rely on. The elections will tell us what we don't know yet. How strong is still this deep Hungary? The deep Hungary pollsters are trying to figure out in dimension, but we are not sure that the pollsters who are now putting Tisza at a 10, 12, or even 15 points lead in the national polls, so we don't know how accurately can depict this hidden or deep Hungary.
Right. So there's sort of two levels of challenge there. One, they could be ahead on the national poll, but that may not translate to a majority of seats. But also, the polling might not be accurate in terms of key constituencies that Fidesz could mobilize on election day.
That's correct. And we have other factors very rapidly. First is the third party, which is likely to make it into the parliament. It is called Mi Hazánk, Our Motherland. This is a radical or far-right-wing party, very much pro-Russian, but also anti-corruption. So they are, technically speaking, an opposition party, but on major geopolitical issues, they are totally aligned with Fidesz, or they are even more radical than Fidesz. It has to be decided what kind of plans Orbán might have with this party. If Fidesz needs the 5, 6, or 7% votes of this party, or they will make some hidden or even more open agreements with this party, even before the elections, to cooperate in the unlikely but not technically impossible case where this party becomes decisive to create a new government. We might have a situation in which the two major parties score more or less the same in terms of parliamentary seats, and then the 6 or 7 or 8 MPs, Mi Hazánk, this third party, sends into the parliament become really decisive. This would be unprecedented for Hungary, where parliamentary majorities have been already quite clear after the elections. But these elections are special. These elections are so dramatic and tight that this must also be taken into consideration. And one last factor, external influences. We know about a very heavy and almost open involvement of Russia at different levels, hybrid warfare, cybernetic warfare, political pressure, economic pressure through the energy tools, so that Orbán Viktor stays in power. It is critically important for Vladimir Putin to keep in power the man who has become the most valuable player and asset of Russia within the EU and within the so-called collective West. So I am quite sure that Moscow will do everything in its power not to let down Orbán, We don't know what they are capable of precisely, or which will be the boundaries of this intervention, but we already see it happening. And so this must also be taken into consideration that we have an EU and NATO country when the Russians inside the country are not operating against the will of the government, like in the recent cases, for example, of Romania or Moldova. We are speaking about a country where the government is actively supporting these Russian efforts. This is a totally different situation.
Speaking of the range of Russian attempts to influence politics in Hungary, the Washington Post recently reported that Russian intelligence officers suggested staging an assassination attempt on Viktor Orban. Do you give that report credence?
Look, the report was written by Catherine Belton, who is one of the best investigative journalists, and she's also the author of a terrific book on Putin's elite and how Putin has been able to build up, consolidate, and deepen his power in Russia, outside Russia, since the early 2000s. So I think that when the Washington Post and when Catherine Belton spends time and money and a lot of effort, because Catherine Belton also came to Budapest for a couple of days in the weeks before the article came out and spoke to a lot of people. So when all this effort is put into this, it signals, so it must have to signal two things. First, the West is not indifferent to what is happening. So the extent of Russian influence in Hungary, around Hungary, has become really worrying for Brussels, for Berlin, and also probably for some parts of Washington, if not the White House, certainly the State Department. We don't have to imagine even the second Trump administration as a monolith. They are probably not. There are several lines, and one line is the more traditional Atlantic one. And since Hungary is still a member of NATO, still a member of this Euro-Atlantic alliance, it is very important to keep them on page and online on several crucial issues. And one other important thing, of course, I have no idea whether an assassination or a staged assassination attempt was planned, but I think that it was very good that Peter Magyar and the opposition pundits and also media started to shout and cry about this, because this made impossible even to seriously plan it. Because if you start shouting that there will be an assassination attempt on Orban in Europe during his speech, during that rally, a good planner wouldn't go for this. And I think that that was critically important, that this Russian influence, which is absolutely real, which is absolutely there, and it is verifiable, was immediately exposed, so to avoid possible harsher consequences. So I think that Hungary has become a logistic and ideological battleground for different forces. And of course, this election is very much about geopolitics. As my friends in the foreign ministry or around the foreign ministry and around think tanks used to say, is about Vienna or the idea of Vienna or Minsk, the capital of Belarus, which is now an informal province of the Moscow Empire. Are we trying to stick to the line that we should try to be like Vienna, so a periphery of the Western Empire, or are we really getting closer and closer to be a province of Moscow in terms of influence, in terms of geopolitical orientation? So I think that for those part of the Hungarian electorate who are able to understand these connections, I think that the stake of the election has become very clear over the last few months. The point is, what are thinking those Hungarians, hundreds of thousands or even a couple of millions, who vote in a certain direction for totally different reasons? So they have no tools to understand
really what's at stake in geopolitical terms, or they still think that Orban, which is not good, but maybe not as bad for them, is still better than the man they don't know. So it is still better to start to the not so good now, because many people fear so much about the future, fear about possible war, fear about strikes, fear about very high oil prices. So they fear about the future, and so they want to be protected. And even at the price of giving up hopes in a really better future. And this is also a psychological mindset we have to take into consideration.
The OSCE election monitoring pre-election report describes, perhaps euphemistically, a vibrant and intense electoral atmosphere and says the contest has been characterized by frequent negative campaigning and personalized attacks. When we spoke back in July of 2024, you expressed fears that the Orban government would launch, I think you used the phrase, a viciously rabid, dirty Russian-style campaign of defamation against Peter Maya and Tisa. What has actually happened? How would you characterize the campaign you've been observing in the last few weeks?
I am afraid I was right. They did it, but they did much more, to be fair. We know now that a special section of the Hungarian civil secret service had been actively working on cover operations on Tisza starting from the summer of 2024 until now, with the open goal of destroying the party, using typical techniques of non-democratic secret services like tapping infiltration of agents. Even his fiancée was, in fact, an agent of this service. And unfortunately for Peter Magyar, this came out quite late for him. So they had the opportunity of tapping him to get a lot of sensitive information from within the party. They tried to destroy several times the informatics system of the party in 2025, early 2026. So now the scandal is public, and the scandal, of course, is influencing even those public servants who were closer to Fidesz, but now they are really in anger because they see the not at all clean goals for which the state apparatus has been used by the government. So all this is now clear. We have to see how deep the effect will be on the general electorate. Of course, we know that independent media and influencers are now exposing all this. But of course, state media portrays a totally different picture in which Tiso is a Ukrainian party, in which Volodymyr Zelensky and not Peter Magyar is the main opponent of Viktor Orban. If someone comes to Budapest, one has the impression that they are fighting against Zelensky and not against Peter Magyar. Peter Magyar is just a tool in the hands of Zelensky and of Ursula von der Leyen, the chief of the European Union Commission. So Anne Applebaum, in a piece recently published, spoke about this electoral campaign like maybe the first campaign based on a post-fact idea of the world. And the post-fact idea is very telling because we are not even speaking about truth to be disputed. We are speaking about an electoral campaign in which facts have been totally overlooked in order to create a narrative which is basically a parallel universe. And a substantial part of the country has been now able to live and imagine his decisional power, his vote, in terms of a parallel universe. I think that in a more or less democratic environment, this is unprecedented and makes, once again, Hungary a very interesting and also worrying laboratory for the rest of the world.
Stefano, based on your observation of Peter Maya's performance since he shot to prominence a couple of years ago, how confident are you that he could rework the degraded structures of Hungarian democracy to make it a more credible and less authoritarian leaning government? And do you think he's going to win?
I think he can win. I do not want to play with words. I think that he has a path to victory. I don't think that there are, unless the power collapses abruptly in the next 10 days, which is still possible, but unlikely, unless the power system really collapses and the consensus, the personal consensus and the personal aura of Viktor Orban collapses in his long-standing electors, the victory of Peter Modyar is real, but it can be narrow. A narrow victory means the country and all state institutions transformed into a potential battleground, which means a chaotic situation, which means a strong opposition, which means a lot of controversial decisions to be taken in a very shaky global environment when wars are waged basically all over the place, where global leaders like Donald J. Trump and Vladimir Putin seem to be very much interested in supporting Viktor Orban and not his opponent. So I think that the path to victory is still there. So the room for maneuver of Peter Modyar depends on many factors. And one has to take into consideration that Hungary has a problem with democracy. This problem with the practice of democracy and the idea of democracy hasn't started with 2010 when Viktor Orban established his system. Hungary inherited this problem with democracy from the very long 20th century. So on the one side, this election is not only about 2026 and about Viktor Orban now, but it is about the long-standing legacy of authoritarian systems in the history of Hungary since 1918, basically, up to now, with a short parenthesis between 1990 and 2010. On the other side, a democratic culture has not only to be rebuilt, but it has to be built in a world in which we see democratic backsliding and threats to democracy all over around. So which are the models Hungary can really follow? It is a huge question, and this is why I can't be so much optimistic about this, because this country has to build a model of functioning modern or postmodern democracy in a world like opportunities, like the post-1989 liberal order, are no longer existing, because the post-1989 liberal, almost unipolar order has been collapsing. So Hungary must to find a place under a new sun of democracy in much more difficult conditions than it happened after 1989, after the end of the Cold War. I don't think that this is an impossible task. I'm just saying that it won't be easy.
It does sound like an extraordinarily steep mountain to climb, but the trends are certainly in favour of Tisza and Peter Modyar. It's been very informative to hear your assessment of it. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra, Dr. Stefano Bertoni.
Thank you so much.
And Stefano is speaking to us from Budapest. He's associate professor at the University of Florence and for a decade was the senior research fellow at the Hungarian Academy of Sciences.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.